All right, everyone. Welcome back. This is the Pandemic Pod, episode 5. I'm here with Michael and Mimi, and Mimi's going to introduce our guest today.
Hi, everyone. This is my dear friend, Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick. She is an infectious disease doctor, is well-known around the world for her contribution to the medical field, and I'll let her take it from here. Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, thanks. It's great to be here. Oh, you guys have such great energy.
Because we're rushing. Well,
yeah, so I'm an infectious disease doc who worked for a CDC in Atlanta and globally for about 10 years. And I moved to DC 12 years ago, and I've been working in medicine, research, community advocacy, all sorts of things across the health sector. Most recently, I worked for the Medicaid program and decided to leave all of that behind and start my own company. It's called Grapevine Health, and that's mostly because people trust health information from their friends and family more than doctors, unfortunately. So we want to leverage those relationships and that trust to help improve the understanding and the truthfulness of medical information. Because even though you all might be passing health information amongst yourself, that doesn't mean everything you're saying is true. Uh-huh. So we want to make sure there are medical experts in these conversations as well. So we focus on health literacy, which is understanding and being able to use health information. So this is a great time to be talking about health literacy because of what's going on.
You couldn't be a more perfect person for us to talk to. And I'm hoping we're only passing information amongst ourselves at this point. I was so excited that you were coming on. I am just confused in many things, but especially with what's going on right now, with what is true, what's not true. There's so much information. I almost have stopped reading some of the media because I'm not sure what to believe or understand. This is your field. Can you help? Please.
Yeah, so the first of all, we should all just like take a big breath. Right? This country lived through the Spanish flu. A lot of people died. Not as many people will die. Not even close to as many people will die. And these viruses, they crop up now and then. You've heard of bird flu. You've heard of SARS, you've heard of MERS. So these viruses, they're out there and they shift and transition and do things that we don't expect. And so that's what's going on now. It's unfortunate how much conflicting information is out there, but also how much scary information is out there. And the reason it's scary is because these scientists we call modelers. Have you seen these models with the graphs that show the hockey stick? This is how many people are going to die if you don't do this, or a million people are going to die. And it's very sensational, and the media loves that stuff. And so everybody just feeds on this information because it sounds exciting, but it's freaking people out and it's raising the stress level big time. So I think the reason there's so much confusion is because we were behind the eight ball. So if you think about, and most people probably don't even know how this whole thing started. So in China, back in December, a doctor raised the alarm about some unique cases of viral pneumonia. And they ignored him for a little bit. And they squashed his information because they didn't want it to get out. And this doctor actually ended up in the ICU and a few weeks later died from COVID. But the problem is, when they discovered the problem, because they didn't tell anyone else, there's a lot of travel between the United States and China, and China and the rest of the world. So imagine all these flights leaving and coming and going from China with people who may or may not have been exposed or infected, and they're flying all over the world. And this is in December. Now, fast forward to January. The Chinese scientists told people what was going on. They actually figured out exactly what the virus was, created a test, and then deployed it widely in China. They offered it to other countries. They put it in a global database to say, here's what it is. You can use it as you will. We decided we wanted to make our own. And because we did that, we bungled the response. So we didn't we made our own. The tests, there were problems with the test. There weren't enough test kits available to test people. And by the time we were ready to act on this outbreak, thousands of people were already infected. So that's what happened. And so that's why there's a lot of confusion about, well, should I get a test or shouldn't I get a test? The reason there's confusion around getting a test versus not getting a test is because we were not ready. So the medical providers don't have enough what we're calling personal protective equipment. So those are the masks and the gloves and the gown. So every time, if you three go and get a test, the person who's testing you is going to have on all that equipment. But what if only one of you is positive and the other two are negative? It means that they've used two extra sets that could have been used for someone who was sick because we don't have enough to go around. So that's why we're now saying if you have mild symptoms or you feel like you have a cold, then don't get a test. Just shelter in place at home, because up to 90% of the people who get this virus actually do fine. It's the 10 or 15% of the people who have other medical conditions or or who are up in age. Those are the people who most commonly get this. So I know it's frustrating. There's a lot of information we still don't know, but it's gonna blow over at some point. I promise you, I just don't know when. So let me stop there and see if you have questions.
I've got, yeah. So, I mean, because, you know, I have parents who are in the target age range, and, you know, we're not, I talk to them through the door right now. They live close, but fearful, you know, they're still getting groceries delivered and, you know, having some interaction with the world. And I'm not even sure if I pick up something and give it to them, like, what are some best practices? I mean, I don't feel like I'm exhibiting the symptoms that I have heard of, but I know it can be milder. I mean, I don't know if you have any insight on how do we start regulating and knowing when we should isolate even.
Yeah. So the good news is the asymptomatic spread, or people who don't have symptoms, spreading this to someone else, it's actually a small percentage. But people get very excited and concerned about that because you don't necessarily know who's going to be sick and who isn't. And even though it's a small percentage, people still get really excited about it. Sort of like, to me, the positive news about COVID-19 is that up to 90% of the people do fine. So I think there are no absolutes. So if you adhere to the hand hygiene, cough hygiene, the sanitizing surfaces like your phone, those are the things that we need to be doing. There's no way to know whether or not you're transmitting something to your parents or to other people, but the best we can do is each person do what they can to make sure your hands are sanitized. You're mindful of what you've been touching. The social distancing is actually a really powerful mechanism. So if you want to leave something, you know, for your parents on the porch, then there's plenty of opportunity for social distancing there. So you can leave the package, make sure, if you're really concerned, make sure you can use gloves, or make sure they wipe the package down before they open it. And if you're on the porch, there's easily 6 feet of distance between you. But I've been encouraging families to be together. As long as you're together and no one is exhibiting symptoms, then the main thing is that you have the support of each other. I understand it's difficult if you've been away from your parents and you're trying to decide, well, should I go and visit them? Then that's a trickier one. And I think each person has to make their own determination about whether or not they feel comfortable. I haven't seen my mother, not because I don't think I should go. She doesn't want me to come. So
let me ask you this. So I think that's a good kind of overview of what's going on and kind of how to take good care of ourselves. Let me ask you, shift a little bit to, when did you start noticing, like in your world, in both professional or personal world, when did you start noticing people reacting or things starting to shift? Shift for you.
And what about when we heard about the nursing home outbreak in Washington State? Did you all hear about that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, people got excited about that because they couldn't find a person working in the nursing home or living in the nursing home who had been in contact with someone who had been to China. And what that signals is that there is community spread already. So when you have an outbreak situation, no matter how small, and we have these outbreaks all the time, alfalfa sprouts with salmonella or ice cream with E. coli or whatever, these outbreaks happen. But generally in those outbreaks, you quickly find the source, and then you remove the source or isolate the source, and then you find all the people who've been around that person, or find the common sources of infection, and then you can mitigate at that point. But we were so far behind by the time we learned about the nursing home, people realized, oh my God, this is already out in the community. What do we do? And so that's when I think people really started taking this seriously, because there was a high death rate in the nursing home compared to the background death rate in China or even in Italy. And so from there, it's just escalated. And now you see what's happening in New York. And so if you think about what happened in the beginning in New York, they had a few cases in this small community, New Rochelle, but people were not adhering to the public health guidance, and they were going around doing whatever they wanted to do. And because this virus spreads much more quickly and efficiently than flu and some of the other viruses, like coronavirus is not new. It causes colds every year, but this is a new one that can spread more easily. So people weren't taking it seriously in New York, and now this is a situation we have. And so I think everybody's awake now and realizing, okay, we need to take this seriously. Maybe except for young people. And also I think I live in Southeast DC now, and I have been doing some outreach and some service in the community, and I notice people are not practicing social distancing. So it's interesting, when you ask them about coronavirus, they're not afraid of it. And someone said, well, it's more dangerous for me to live in my neighborhood than to worry about coronavirus. Mm. So I think it just depends on your perspective and where you live. So there are different pockets of people really paying attention to this and taking it seriously. But the whole world knows about it now, right? So.
Well, I was gonna say, how much of that do you think is like awareness of it and good precautions versus kind of like a personal, you know, like I'm fine. How much of it is awareness or like an intentional choice to not take the right precautions?
I think those attitudes are driven by profound distrust. And I've been studying this for a long time, why people are distrustful of the healthcare system. It's why one of my company and my personal values is trust. Because if you don't have that, you can't do much else. And because people have felt so disenfranchised over the years, or felt misled by the government and even by health systems, this is no different for them. And so you can't imagine all the conspiracy theories I hear. You know, there's apparently, and I don't know if this is true, but there's some sort of research lab in Wuhan. And so maybe you've heard this. People think that this was an orchestrated bioterrorist attack. The virus was concocted in the lab in Wuhan and sent out around the world. So people ask me that, and I just have to be honest and say, I have no idea, but guess what? I'm really glad that it doesn't have the lethality of Ebola. It's not as deadly, because Ebola kills 50% of its victims. So if it was a virus that was created for the purposes of terrorism, it's very weak. But look at what it's done to our society and our economy. So, that's nothing to take lightly. So I don't really get too much into conspiracy theories because what can you do with that information? So, and then I certainly don't claim to be an expert, and I have no way of knowing where this virus originated. So,
I mean, that's an interesting, if it is true, how does that change our current?
Exactly. Right.
So Lisa, I know that we would like to have you back on the podcast maybe next week as we can have an update by Dr. Lisa every week. I mean, but truly we would like to have you back, but because we have a shorter day today with our podcast. But I wanted to ask you, what do you see the trajectory? What is it going to be, and like timeliness of, will it work itself out of the system? Will we try to go back to business as usual earlier than we should? What are your thoughts on, the next few months? Yeah, prognosis for
I think the hope is that this virus is going to fizzle out when it gets warm. Because that's what other viruses do. You notice how we get a lot of colds and flu when it gets cold outside. The problem is this is a new strain, so we have no idea what it's going to do.
Also, Wuhan is very warm.
I actually don't know about the climate there, but I know that Australia is warm right now, and they have
Australia is warm. The UAE is warm, and so that's one of the interesting ones is like the relationship between what we really know and what's being spread, and that this like the seasonality of it. There's no real evidence to prove that it's seasonal.
Exactly. And those are the arguments that it's not, right? Because Singapore is another one. Australia, although it's coming, it'll be coming toward winter in Australia, but it's still warm there and they have a good number of cases. My hope is that this will just fizzle out like most viral epidemics do. But I don't have a crystal ball and I have no way of predicting that. But what I do know is while Washington State and New York City, they're having a terrible time right now. But look at what all the other cities that haven't gotten hit as hard can learn from them. It's an opportunity. So the missed opportunity to control this outbreak when it first happened. So back in January, when WHO and China told us that this virus was a threat, that's when we should have been proactive. We should have been creating a test. We should have been stopping flights. We waited almost three weeks to stop the flights from China. So, but other cities now can look at those lessons of how we bungled the initial public health response, and they can take control locally. And this is what I hope will allow us to stop the spread across the country. And so even though most states have reported cases, New York is clearly an outlier. And it looks like New Orleans or Louisiana is also going to be another hotbed. You probably have heard a little bit about this, Mimi.
Yes,
I have. And then Washington State. But we have, over 40 more states that don't have that situation. So I think there's an opportunity there. And I just hope people will wake up and do these simple things to slow the spread.
Thank you. Invaluable information, Lisa. And Michael's going to ring the bell and ask you, go ahead. We do want to have you back, though.
I just have one more thing to say. One of the things people asked me was, is it okay to drink bleach?
Ooh.
To get rid of the coronavirus. And so no matter who I'm talking to, And it sounds outlandish, but I think people make all sorts of concoctions, you know? So even if it's being diluted, do not ingest bleach. So make sure everybody knows that. It's a toxic substance if you drink it.
Wow. Ooh, yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Drano too? No Drano either.
I don't think Drano's, I don't think it's a, it's that's not, not supposed a, to be.
This, that doesn't help with
the viruses.
Oh, I take it for, anyway. No. Okay, so now we're going to ring, now we're going to ring the bell. This is our closing. And we end with just a question about personally, just because there is so much information and shift happening. Just curious, like, how are you personally working to stay grounded in your best version of you through this process? And we asked for if you have up to three things that you might share with us.
Yeah, wow, that's great. So like we started, I take a lot of deep breaths. And Mimi knows about my breathing.
She's also a yogi. Let me put.
Yeah, she knows about my breathing. I'm like a breathing nut. I also think people should distance themselves from social media and just media in general. Like, take a break, look away. And I know it's really hard to look away, but you have to, because if you get stuck in this vortex, this information overload, and it just makes you even more wound up and stressed out. So even if you can shut off your phone or not look at any news or any of the craziness for a few hours a day, I think it's really helpful. And the last one is get some sleep. Try to go to sleep without technology in your bedroom. I know that's a challenge because a lot of us go to sleep by technology, whether we're watching something like Netflix or listening to a podcast or whatever, but just try it for one or two nights and see how you feel when you wake up. I pretty much guarantee that you're going to have a better sleep if you shut off your device, go into your room at least an hour before bed, and then see how you feel when you wake up. Sleep is really important, and so many people are walking around sleep deprived. And when we're stressed like we are now because of COVID-19, it's even more important to get sleep. Let your body regenerate and heal itself.
Wow, this has been great. An incredible resource. I mean, everything. So will you come back and see us again?
Yeah, let's do like you know, weekly check-ins. I like it.
Yeah, now that I know, I have to comb my hair first.
You didn't know you'd be, you didn't know there's a video portion, but you look great.
She has the brightest smile, doesn't she? Seriously. Just the nicest. Lisa, thank you so much for having me. Derek closes us out, and I adore you. Thank you so much for being here with us today. And
namaste.
Please come back to us again, and Derek will close us.
Yeah, we just want to say thank you for spending your time and talking to us and sharing your perspective and what you're doing. So we really appreciate it.
And you'll put your company information in the show notes,
yep,
right?
Yeah, we'll put notes to how to find you in our show notes and all that business.
Okay, thank you for having me, and happy to come back.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay.
Bye.